Welcome to Too Many Podcasts, the podcast about podcasts. Now, podcasting from the Sherpa Chalet on Mount Podcastia, here's your host, Jim, the podcast Sherpa.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Yep, that's me, all right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Too Many Podcasts. You can always get in touch with me by email, jimthepodcastsherpa@gmail.com, or you can reach me on social media through Facebook with Too Many Podcasts, or Twitter, or Instagram at Too Many Podcasts with the number 2. I don't know why. I just couldn't get it the other way. You know the story, blah, blah, blah. You know, I was checking around and I figured I haven't looked in my mailbox lately, so I figured I'll take a walk over there.
Whatever you do, just don't go to the mailbox.
I found a message with a request from a listener saying, hey, could you do an episode about personal finance? And I said, I like that. Yeah, I will do an episode about personal finance because it's always important to everybody. So I hunted high and low and I found the right person to interview, and you'll be hearing from him in just a few seconds. And as we know in Podcastia, since we've got a guest and we've got a theme, that constitutes a... Sing it, boys!
It's theme week! It's theme week! It's theme week!
And those of you who are familiar with the show know that today's podcast is being brought to you by Audible, and you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Sherpa. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Okay, let's pay a little visit down to the Sherpa Chalet conference room, and you can hear my conversation with my guest. What's his name?
Who's our guest today, Sherpa?
His name is Ryan Inman, and he hosts the podcast Financial Residency. And we had a great talk about personal finance. Let's check it out. Hey, here we are in the conference room at the Sherpa Chalet. You know, this past week, I've been suffering with my allergies. And, you know, I ended up going to the doctor yesterday and he prescribed some medicine. And I'm thinking, well, you have someone for your physical health. But what about your wallet? Who is taking care of your wallet? Well, I've been hunting high and low, and I just happen to find a gentleman here who's got a podcast called Financial Residency. His name is Ryan Inman. Everybody, say hello to Ryan Inman.
Hey, hey. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining me. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I host the Financial Residency podcast, where it's helping physicians understand their finances. And so it's a small niche subject that I can talk on because I'm really talking to physicians there. But it's fun. It's really helping them understand how to, you know, really conquer their finances. And it came about because I am married to a pediatric pulmonologist, and we've been together like since we were 18. So I got it young when, you know, we were in college, then med school, then residency, then fellowship, kind of the whole shebang. And my day job, if you will, you know, I podcast at night, and day job is I'm a fee-only financial planner for physicians all across the country. And it's just a subset that I love working with. I'm obviously married to a physician, so I'm part of a physician family, and I understand, you know, the highs and the lows, the joys and the pains, if you will, that go along with being married to medicine. And that's how really the podcast got started. And, you know, I've enjoyed, we just had our 2-year anniversary. And it's been a blast, and I'm one of those guys that just love the journey. So it's been super fun.
Now, you said that you are a fee-only financial planner.
Yes.
Now, there are different types of financial planners. What's the difference between a fee-only and one who's not a fee-only?
Oh, man, I love it. We're going to open up the can of worms. Okay. So, the thing is advisor, and it could be spelled with an O-R, an E-R, you know, for financial advisor, financial planner, investment manager. They're all kind of the same thing, and they're marketed different ways, but really all roads point back to the same thing. So there's fee-only financial planning, and there's fee-based financial planning. That one word is a big difference, fee-only and fee-based. So if you think of fee-based planners. About 97% of all advisors or planners across the country are fee-based. And what that means is not only can they earn a living from, or a paycheck, if you will, from their client, but they can also receive kickbacks or commissions from products that they sell. So if you went to a planner and they said, you know, Jim, I really want you to go get some term life insurance. Sure. You're thinking, okay, hopefully this advisor knows what he's talking about. He's telling me I need it. Hopefully he has the best intentions. And of course, he's now going to sell me this product. And there's a lot of conflicts with that pricing model and the way that they get paid. And it doesn't mean that they're bad people. I actually have a lot of friends that are fee-based. It just means that they can sell a product and earn money that isn't coming from their client. The biggest, you know, worry with that though is the conflict of, well, are they telling me that because it really is in my best interest? Or are they telling me that because they make more money? And other ways that they could do that would be, say I have a CPA that I know and love. And I'm like, Jim, you really got to work with Dean. She's an amazing CPA. Well, I don't have to disclose to you that, by the way, when you sign up with Jane, she's going to pay me $500 because I gave her a new client, you. I don't have to disclose that as a fee-based advisor. Fee-only advisors, they can only earn income from their clients and what's decided and negotiated upon in what's called a client agreement. So when you start working, let's say with us, and you sign the client agreement that states, this is exactly how we're going to work, and this is the exact pay structure we're gonna make. If I introduce you to Jane CPA, because I know and love her and I think she's going to do a great job, I can't even receive like a $5 Starbucks gift card. It's black and white. I can only earn money from you, not from anyone else. And that also means that the fee-only planners out there, again, a small community, like less than 3% of all the advisors in the US are fee-only. That means that they don't sell products. And that's a really big deal because it eliminates a lot of conflicts of interest.
We were saying earlier that I was trying hard to find a financial advisor to talk to, and there were so few of you that actually do podcasts.
There are very few that do podcasts. I think the biggest one that I know and I actually love and is a mentor of mine, as we were talking, is the Retirement Answer Man with Roger Whitney. And if you're listening and you are near or in retirement, that is an amazing podcast and a great resource for, you know, just understanding what's coming up in your lives when with respects to retirement. But yeah, there's very few advisors that like podcasting, that know about podcasting, are comfortable podcasting. Most of them are very guarded. This isn't a knock on any of them. It's just they're very guarded. They're like, why would I tell all my knowledge to everyone for free? I want you to pay me. That's whole part of the perk of working with me. Kind of get that, but at the same time, like there's so many, let's take physicians. There's so many physicians in the country I could never work with. My firm is not that big. There's only four of us. We can't handle hundreds of thousands of physicians, but I can help change their lives by helping them understand their finances. And that to me is worth it. And that's really the main driver, the passion behind what I do.
Yeah, and that's what tells me that I got the right guy to speak to today, too. Awesome. So I appreciate you coming on the show. We hear so many people complaining, you know, I don't have enough money for retirement. I don't know where to start. How do I invest in the stock market? There's a lot of uncertainty. So why don't we start with some of the basics? When you talk with some of your clients, or even just the people who aren't in the medical field, what would you advise them to start with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So looking at the medical field specifically, they have a whole bunch of different things that make it very unique to plan for them. Our average client has $290,000 of student debt alone. Like, think about that, almost $300,000 in the hole as you finish your training and start your first job. It's insane. There's a whole bunch of other issues that they have. But for everyone else, all of us that are not physicians, you know, it's really understanding how much money is coming in and how much money is going out. And that, and I'm going to say it and people are going to shudder, but it's the budget word, right? It's, and I did a whole show on this. It's called the dreaded B word is how I reference it, because I don't like saying budget because I feel like immediately everyone turns off the podcast, which I hope they didn't hear. But that is like how I feel like everyone interprets that, because they feel like budgeting is constricting, that it's something that you shouldn't like. It's like eating Brussels sprouts, and it's not true. Some people like Brussels sprouts. I happen to not. But you know, I know as a kid, my mom always said, "You're going to eat that," and I'm like, "No." But you know, we can look at it in a nicer way, cash flow planning, if you will, right? Understanding how much money is coming in, right? Your income or several income sources, doesn't matter where it's coming from. Could be Uber and Lyft. It doesn't matter. Wherever you're making money, and then how are you spending that money is what truly matters the most. Because if you spend all of your money, you have nothing to invest. You're not saving anything for the future. Now, and obviously everyone will know that makes sense. It's logical. But there's studies out that show like the average American can't cover a $400 emergency. So while we all know it's better if we save money, most of us as a nation are not doing it. We all know that fast food is not very good for us, yet we all eat fast food, doctors included, right? So it doesn't always mean that we're going to do the right things, even though we know that them to come true. So I would say understanding how much money is going out, digging in, and actually kind of doing some analysis on it. And I don't want you to like knee-jerk reaction, like a, you know, some fad diet that is, you know, kale and water for 3 weeks. Like you're going to fail and then gain all the weight back. So don't do that with your budgeting. Don't become super restrictive and say, I got to make all these changes right now. I tell people that aren't working with us, just monitor for 90 days what you do and how you do it. And then I'd rank the way that you spend money in a way that what makes you happiest, right? Because I hear it all the time. Oh, I'd love to put the kids in soccer, but it's so dang expensive. I can't afford it. Well, why can't you afford it? Is it because you're misplacing your priorities? Because $200, while it is expensive, a lot of people can afford the $200. But it's, did you spend $600 on Amazon this month? Whoops. Like, how did that make you feel? Like, you like the instant, you know, dopamine hit by clicking buy and getting that package, but were you just buying material things? You know, and it takes that stopping and understanding, am I spending money in a way that makes me happiest? That's where I would start. All the other pieces kind of come in line after you've figured out what cash flow is, what cash flow planning is, and how it works, and how it really sets you free, not constricts you.
And once you really know like what you're saving on something by not spending as much, you really have to put that money to work for you though.
Yeah. So it depends, right? If you're saving, I mean, everyone should have multiple savings accounts. And this is the behavioral finance side of this. You don't just have one savings account and lump everything in there. Emergency, travel, vet bills for your dogs, you get tossed in. You won't understand what is in there. So if an emergency does happen, or you know, hey, we're going to plan this trip to Orlando and take the kids to Disney World. Great. But how much do you know is your travel versus your emergency versus other goals? You don't. So starting with the bank structure, understanding that, okay, look, you know, family Disney vacation is a whole savings account and there's only $1,000 in there. Maybe we can't afford to take that trip just yet. We should save more. But my emergency fund is fully funded. You know, my dogs always end up eating something or doing something stupid, and I always have to take them to the vet. So I literally have a savings account for my dogs because it happens. One thing that we all do, and I'm guilty of this too back in the day before I really started putting all this together myself, we all know that Christmas comes at the same time of year. We all know that birthdays come at the same type of year in the holidays. Why are we all so shocked that, oh man, December rolled around, my budget got busted? Why? Like, save all year. And I'm just throwing out Christmas, could be any holiday, but yeah, say you spend, I don't know, $600 at Christmas and you know that all the gifts are going to be spent. You should be saving $50 every single month in a sinking fund or a savings account specifically earmarked for those type of things. So when Christmas comes, you put it on your credit card, you transfer the money up to your savings, from your savings to your checking, and you pay off your bill. That's how you don't blow up your budget. You stay responsible and you can still enjoy and do the things that you want to do, which is, you know, buy friends and loved ones gifts if that is what you like doing and so inclined on Christmas and birthday or Hanukkah or whatever it is.
Okay, so it's really just keeping an eye first on what's coming in and what's going out. That would be step number one.
Yeah, and then once you've really outlined all those pieces, and then we have to look at investing, right? It's making sure that you're maxing out tax-deferred accounts. So there's, what I mean by that is there's like usually employer-sponsored accounts like a 401k or a 403b. And then there's the individual retirement accounts, the IRAs that you're looking at. And when you, in that limit is $6,000 a year that you can put in. And depending on where your income level is, you might have phased out of putting money directly in a Roth IRA versus the traditional, which I think I should probably explain that really quick.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah, no, I saw your face. I was like, okay, let me explain that real quick. So there's two types of IRAs. Well, there's more than that, but for the sake of the high level discussion, there's a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. And when you put money in the traditional, if you haven't phased out from that income level, you put money in, you get a deduction for the current year that it's in. It stays in that account and it can grow tax-free until you're ready to pull it out. The earliest you can make a withdrawal and pull out the money is 59 and a half. And at 70 and a half, they're going to make you take retirement required minimum distributions or RMDs. And essentially the reason they're doing that is because Uncle Sam wants his money. He's let you grow tax-free for so long. He's like, all right, man, time to pay me. And so they're going to say, hey, here's the minimum you take out. Now, most people, they will have to take out more than that because they're going to be living off of it or some of that. The other side of this is the Roth IRA. And what that does is you put money in, you get no deduction in the current year. It grows tax-free just like that traditional. But now when you take that money out, which the earliest you can do is, again, 59 and a half, but when you take it out, it's tax-free because you already paid the tax on the money when you put it in originally. It was used with after-tax money. So most people, they know about the traditional, almost all work-sponsored plans, the 401ks. Some of them have Roth options. Most of them are traditional. So you're getting that deduction in your current year. You're investing. Those accounts are growing tax-free. And then when you pull it out after age 59 and a half, before 70 and a half, you're going to end up paying tax on it. So most people would like to have some money in both types of settings. And there's more complex strategies like the backdoor Roth example and some other stuff that will help you get money into the Roth setting or the Roth type of accounts. But it's probably a little more complex than we should go into.
Okay.
If you want to know more, you can come hang out at Financial Residency because I definitely go and talk and nerd out on this stuff.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. What advice would you have for somebody who, let's say, they're a little bit older? I mean, it's usually great to start when you're in your 20s or so, once you're starting to earn income. But let's say a person is in their 50s and maybe they weren't really in a position to start socking away money. What should they do?
Well, if you can put away money into those tax-deferred accounts still, I mean, you're going to want to do that. It'll lower your tax liability. It'll grow tax-free. And even if you only have 10 or 15 years of left. But really, you're going to have to focus on there's two sides to this. Either you make more money or you spend less money. Either way, you need to start saving more money. Because if you're 50 and you haven't saved anything, you're going to either work the entire time until literally you pass away, or you're going to have to start saving and changing your behaviors and your relationship around money now. And I meant now, like literally yesterday. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, it every day you prolong this is going to make it harder for you when you're older. So that was a Chinese proverb, like the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is right now. Like if you're 50 and you're listening right now and you don't have much saved for retirement, figure out a way to get money into those accounts. And if there's a way that you can max those and still have money, all the better, because your savings rate has to be accelerated at this point. You have to be saving a good amount of your take-home pay because you're going to need it in the future when you can't work.
There are a lot of financial retirement calculators that people can look at to get an understanding of, you know, how much they should be putting away?
Yeah, there's some out there, and usually the best ones are the paid ones. And, you know, there's software that financial advisors use, they subscribe to and pay so they can run calculations for all their clients. I'll tell you what, the younger you are, the less those things actually mean. And that's the truth. There's no reason for a 30-year-old to throw out projections that they're going to retire in 35 years and then hope to have enough money. Like one little blip, one little change sends this thing, like it's super volatile and it's almost meaningless when it's that far out. Now, if you are 5 years out from retirement, there's great calculators out there. And obviously the financial planning stuff is amazing because you're dealing with a much shorter time frame, right? But the longer you go out, the harder it is to forecast or to expect what's going on. And it's not really as beneficial. So for the younger crowd out there, even the older crowd, I look at it as stick with what you can control and look 1 to 3 years out and figure out what is that ideal life look like? Where do you want to be going? What do you want to be doing? How much do you want to be working? Who do you want to be with? Like answer the big questions, those big boulders, right? And then all this other little stuff are the rocks and the pebbles and the sand that kind of fill in around it. Understand where are you going in the next 1 to 3 years? And then try to match your finances around that. Most people think of it completely backwards. But even planners, they tell you, you make this much, you've saved this much, well, here's what you can do. That's a horrible way to plan. Really, we should be saying, what do you want to do? How do you want to live? Do you want, there's people that, like, you know, I can relate this to physicians because I work with hundreds of them. I've got physicians that tell me, I want you to wheel me around at 80 doing rounds, seeing patients. Maybe I don't work every day, but I want to work for as long as I possibly can. That planning for them is so different from the other clients that I might have that say, look, I want to be retired at 50, out of medicine, sitting on a beach, kids are already in college, and I'm done. Right? Two very, very distinct things. And you have to look now, obviously you guys aren't going to be planning other people, but everyone is unique. That's why personal finance is personal. So if you think about it, what is it that you want in the next 1 to 3 years? And I love the vision forecasting further, but really 1 to 3 years, what do you want to be doing? And are you going to be working, you know, for the older crowd that might be retiring soon? And if not, then are you prepared enough? Do you need to maybe reach out to someone to get some guidance for that? Or do you feel comfortable doing it? Just make sure they're not an insurance agent masquerading as a financial advisor. Make sure they're a fee-only one. And this isn't a pitch on all advisors because there's plenty of people out there that are perfectly fine doing it themselves. But if you don't have the willpower or dedication or desire or passion to learn about finance and to really kind of nerd out on it, because no one should care more about your money than you do. But if you don't have that true desire, then find someone that's affordable, that can help you achieve those goals, those big boulders, and don't sweat the little small little pebbles in the sand.
That's really deep. And, you know, I was just curious, listening to your response, what your opinion was on the FIRE movement, the financially independent retire early.
Oh boy, another one. Okay.
Just throwing them right at you.
Like haymakers here. All right. So, and I've gotten a lot of crap on my own show about this because I don't like the FIRE movement. I like the FI part. I hate the RE part because to me, and especially for physicians, because they sacrifice so much to get to where they're at. They sacrifice so much. And I mean, I have people that are delaying getting married, delaying having families, student debt. The crisis around student debt is a real deal. Most people think, oh, you're a doctor. You are in the 1%. Let me tell you, unless they're 60, they're not in the 1% if they've been doing it correctly. And most of them haven't because unfortunately, doctors go through all this training. I mean, 20 something years of training and they've never had a single finance course, not one. So all the people in my industry, the insurance people, they understand that and they target them. So not only does society say, oh, you're the wealthy 1%, we don't like you, but then they have the financial industry coming behind and going, hey, we know you don't know anything, so we're going to sell you a bunch of crap products. It's a horrible, horrible sense. But the FIRE movement, the RE part, I just don't like the idea of retiring to something. Like the people that, you know, get up and go to work on Monday and they hate it, and they're so excited for Friday afternoon because they get the week, you know, that weekend. That's like 65% of your life. What you're telling me sucks. Like if you truly love the weekend that much, you're doing the wrong job. So the ones that mostly are in the FIRE movement, they're saving all this money and they're living off, like, not all of them, but the FIRE movement. And then there's like Lean FIRE, and it's because they're all worried about cutting costs as much as they can. They're living this more simplistic life, which is totally fine. But it's because they're so unhappy usually with their normal job that they just need to retire early and get out of it. And my whole thing is become financially independent. That's amazing. And I want everyone, all my clients, everyone to do that. I wish that for the whole world, because that would give everyone the excuse to really go do what they love. And on that RE part, if you need the excuse to retire early to go to something you love, just go to something you love now. Maybe you make a little bit less money. Who cares? If you love what you do and you genuinely enjoy it, that the weekends become the weekdays, who cares if you make 20% less? So that's why I like the FIRE movement. I hate the FIRE movement.
It's like they're retiring early for the wrong reasons.
For the wrong reasons.
All right, let's talk a little bit about stocks. Now, a lot of people feel that that's kind of intimidating, but there's ways around it where they could kind of get a better understanding of it, don't you think?
Oh, of course. You know, and funny enough, that's what most people think. That's all I do, right? Oh, you're a financial advisor. You just are going to pick my stocks investments for me. It's like, no, like that's 1/7 of the pie, right? If we divide it into, you know, 7 pillars of finance, like, you know, that's one part of it, but that's not the only thing, right? We've talked about a bunch of the other stuff, the budgeting, the you know, the visions and what you're trying to do and accomplish, and, you know, cash flow planning, all that good stuff, you know, insurances, and there's a lot that goes into this. But from the investment side, pick up a good book, listen to a couple podcasts. You're going to get caught up to speed, and just don't worry about the small stuff. And what I mean by that is anything short term. And in investing, short term should be like 10 years or less. Because if you're worried about Trump getting impeached, you're worried about trade wars, you're worried about whatever, it doesn't matter. It's go out and take you want some perspective on investing, start studying the history of it. And if you go look at all the pricing history of the last like 100 years, and you're going to look at these huge volatile down days or bear markets, they're little blips along a much higher or much bigger chart that shows an upward trajectory, an upward trend, because over time stocks should and will appreciate. But all the short-term movements, all the hype, the herd mentality of, oh, we need to pile on in because, you know, these, you know, ABC stocks are going to do amazing, or, oh my gosh, the world's, you know, coming to an end and the sky's falling, sell everything. It's all herd panic mentality. So the best thing you can do to understand investing is to start with the basics and understanding just what is a stock, what is a bond. And there's great books. The book I always recommend to people, and I have no relation to this at all, I just think he did an amazing job. His name is Alan Roth. He's actually a financial advisor. And I don't even think he knows that I pitch his book literally everywhere I go. But I think it's an amazing book. And if you want to do one thing for your investments, read this book. And it's called How a Second Grader Beats Wall Street. And it's a phenomenal book that he wrote. And I don't know if it's technically true or not, but he wrote it in the eyes or the lens of a second grader. And understanding how Wall Street makes money, understanding how the index funds and how markets are performing and what you should be looking for in your investments and how index funds work. It's just a phenomenal book that you can read in 2 nights and you're going to have 100% more knowledge on investing than you probably did to start. And then there's really great podcasts. I know we're going to talk about some other shows and things that are great, but there's a great podcast out there to understand the complexities of investing. Do you mind? I'll just say them now.
Good. It's okay.
Cool. Yeah. So there's some great podcasts. So like Money for the Rest of Us, David Stein, brilliant. He ran massive. He's a portfolio manager for a massive firm and he digs super in detailed on that. But if you start with that, you're going to get really confused. So you have to go back to the basics and understand. I already mentioned, you know, the Retirement Answer Man podcast is a great one. There's the Money Nerds podcast. Whitney breaks down, you know, a lot of these terms and in a lot of the terminology so you can understand what's going on. And from a female perspective, which is always fun to hear, because unfortunately there's not a lot of females that are in the advisory space or in the financial space. The Stacking Benjamin show, it's like an award-winning, you know, amazing podcast run by an ex-financial advisor, Joe Saul-Sehy, that I think is a great, great show. There's just so many good shows out there that will teach you, but you've got to start with the basics and then kind of leverage these. So like most of those shows are intermediate. And then I'd say The Money for the Rest of Us by David Stein is a advanced podcast. So start with the basics. He even has a book coming out in October that I think is going to be a fascinating book for it, but it's probably more advanced than what you all need. And so I would start with Alan Roth's book and then kind of cascade through some of the other podcasts and books that are out there.
What do you think are some of the things that people need to avoid when they're trying to get their money in order?
Honestly, if you're going to work with someone, avoid anyone who sells products. That is probably the like number one killer of finances. The other one, and this is a lot of physicians go through this, and I know other fields go through this, but if you're like getting out of college and all of a sudden you got a big paycheck coming in, but that lifestyle creep under, you know, or lifestyle inflation. And it's, I went from not making much to all of a sudden I have a sudden change in income. It could be you got an inheritance and all of a sudden you have a ton of cash. Don't let your expenses grow to what that income is. And that is probably the number two thing that, you know, causes, you know, bad financial health with clients that we work with, is they blow up their finances because they live in this monthly paycheck mentality. Well, I can afford the monthly payment, therefore I can afford it. And that is simply not the case. If you can't afford to pay all cash for something, say a car, you probably can't afford the car. That's okay. It might be hard to hear, but that's that, you know, it's the truth. So what do? You either get a less expensive car or you save longer and then you can do what you want. But understanding probably those couple of things are huge. And just don't fall prey to the insurance people who are selling insurance as an investment. And I have this one little phrase, and if you can remember this, you won't get screwed by anyone. Insurance is insurance. Investments are investments. Never mix the two.
I like that. That's pretty simple and profound at the same time.
Exactly.
I know you've mentioned a couple already, but what are some good financial resources that people can use apart from like the book that you mentioned and some of the other podcasts or anything else that people should be aware of?
Yeah, if you have student debt, so I've got a free software out that you can go through and actually analyze and understand like what repayment option you should be in or should you refinance or not. And it's called loanbuddy.us, loanbuddy.us. And it's seriously just go, you go in, you put in some information, you upload an NSLDS file, which is, if you have federal debt, you will know what that is. And it'll spit out and say, hey, you should be in this repayment option. And you'd be amazed. People charge $500, $600, $700, $800, maybe $1,000 for that information. And to me, we have a student loan crisis on our hands with $2 trillion in student debt. So we do make money. You can pay us to help you change if you needed to switch from one repayment to another. But in reality, most people can do this on their own. And unless you really needed the help, you can go do it on your own and it's completely free. So that is a resource that most people who have student debt or parents in might be more applicable to your audience, but parents who have taken on student debt for their kids or parents that have kids who have student debt, go run it through Loan Buddy and try to understand what repayment option they should be in. Because this is probably the greatest single threat to the millennial, and I say that in quotes here, generation, is student debt. It's a huge, huge issue. So I'd say that's a good resource. The tons of good podcasts. You know, the Bogleheads book is out that, it's talking all about passive investing versus active investing. This is kind of a 2.0 book on top of the one I just said, the How a Second Grader Beats Wall Street. Another great book that I think people would like. And there's so many good, high quality podcasts out there that I think you can learn everything from a podcast these days.
because we're living in such a high-tech world, are there any apps, like money apps, that you would recommend?
So if you like to nerd out on spreadsheets, and I'm not saying I do, but I really do. there's a great software that I use, and I use it with all our clients. It's called Tiller, T-I-L-L-E-R. So, you know, if you go check out, I know that they've got a longer URL than that. I usually just say financialresidency.com/Tiller to get people there. But essentially, they've taken Google Sheets and allowed you to log into like your bank and your credit card and your investment accounts, and it pulls everything into one Google Sheet and then allows you to manipulate the data however you'd like. So for those of you that like spreadsheets and you have a Google account, which if you don't, welcome to the 21st century, get rid of AOL, come into Gmail where you belong. But it's great. It works with Google Sheets. It also works with Excel if you are Microsoft based and can do that. I think that is just a phenomenal one. I'm actually a really big fan of M1 Finance in terms of like purely just an app. So M1 allows you to trade for free, allows you to buy fractional shares. And I think that they've done a really good job in making this thing simplistic enough. They don't build the portfolios for you, but that really won't be a big deal if you just go read a couple books that are really good. Start with the one I just told you, the couple I just told you. And you'll probably be able to build something out pretty simplistic. And I again, subscribe to this KISS thing. Keep it simple, stupid, right? Investments should not be overly complicated. Your banking shouldn't be overly complicated. Don't bank at six banks and have accounts everywhere. Keep it simple and it'll be way easier to manage. But I really like those two things. SoFi Money's got they're just kind of coming on the scene with some easy trading and banking. Vanguard, is probably the king here when we're talking about passive investing, free to trade, easy to sign up. So there's a lot of options out there. I would definitely start with those. And if you guys are interested, you can go to financialresidency.com/resources. And I list out all this stuff of what I use and how I do it and what we recommend. And there's a lot of great stuff out there. There's also a lot of bad stuff, so be careful. But there's with the internet and just so much in technological advances, there's some really great companies that are doing great things.
Okay. And I know you mentioned a couple of podcasts that you like. I wonder, are there any more that you want to bring up?
Yeah. So I don't think I mentioned Paychecks and Balances. Marcus and Rich have a really cool way of talking about money in a very non-threatening way. They're not advisors. They're not money coaches. They're some really smart guys that just like to talk about money. I think they've got an excellent show, Marriage, Kids, and Money with Andy Hill. Awesome show if you have young kids and you want to figure out how to have a better marriage and a better life and be better with your finances. He does an excellent job as well. Yeah, there's so much good stuff. I mean, almost anyone in that top like 200 of business podcasts are doing the right stuff. They have some good stuff, but if I think of more, I'll email them to you so you can include them in your show notes.
Okay, thank you very much. And of course, we have the part of the show called Shameless Self-Promotion.
Shameless Self-Promotion.
And that's where you can let our listeners know where they can get in touch with you and check out your podcast.
Yeah, so financialresidency.com is where kind of our blog, which we put out a couple blogs a week for content. And you can go there. You can listen to the podcast on anywhere you're listening to us literally right now. It's called Financial Residency. And we have a membership site that's coming out in December called Financial Fellowship, which will essentially allow you to build out a financial plan without having to pay an advisor to go do it. It's a small monthly membership in order to do that. And a book coming out in January called Financial Residency. And really that'll be, you read it start to finish, you'll be able to build your own financial plan.
A busy man indeed with a wealth of resources for our listeners today.
Yeah, super fun. I love what I do. I'm one of those that truly enjoy the journey. So it's okay. Been really fun.
His name is Ryan Inman. The podcast, once again, is Financial Residency. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And now it's time for Sherpa Suggestions.
Here's a few more personal finance podcasts you can check out in addition to the Financial Residency podcast. There's the Rich Dad Radio Show, which is hosted by the same author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the Millennial Money Minutes, the Modest Million Show, and two of my personal favorites, Be Wealthy and Smart with Linda P. Jones and the Clark Howard Podcast. Linda P. Jones was previously in the finance field, so her show is primarily about investing, but she puts the terminology in really easy-to-understand terms. Clark Howard has been doing his thing for about 30 years, so he really knows his stuff. And in addition to personal finance, he talks a lot about travel, too, if you're ever looking for a good travel deal. I would probably travel a lot more often, but they won't let my support yak get on the plane. Once again, thanks so much for listening. And if you're new to the show, why not catch up on some of our older episodes, too? Special thanks to Ryan Inman from Financial Residency. Plus, a special thanks to my listener for suggesting this theme. If you would like to suggest a theme for a show, and maybe I can help you out, just drop me a line at jimthepodcastchirpa@gmail.com or contact me on social media, and I'll see what I can do for you, okay? And in the meantime, you can always hear us on a whole bunch of podcast platforms. Anywhere that you're probably listening to a podcast, you will find Too Many Podcasts just waiting to be heard by you. And do me a favor, let at least one person know that you're listening to the show and tell them to check it out, too. It's an easy way to spread the word. Thanks a lot. So until next time, Mr. Bruce, do what makes you Mr. Bruce. Thanks a lot. See you.
Thanks for listening to Too Many Podcasts. Please disperse. You can go home now. I said you can go home now. Viva la Chapelition. Viva la Chapelition. Yeah, I'll come back now you're here.